It's Anime Pacific, episode 78.
Episode 78.
Very exciting.
Yes, very exciting. Before starting the recording here, we were just looking at this upcoming PC game, Darkest of Days, and I thought we should sort of discuss it on the show, just because it's going to be one of those games that either is going to be, like, the premise is just going to be really good, but it's going to suck horribly, or it's just going to suck horribly. I know you have faith in this, it's called Darkest of Days, and the premise is you're like this time traveler, and it's a first-person shooter, so you travel back in time, taking part in some famous battles of history, like Antietam in the Civil War, Jeff the Tarek, that's a shout-out, and I guess you can fight in ancient Rome, too.
Yeah, which I was getting excited, but now that I'm looking at it, like, you're fighting Romans with, like, I don't know, crazy machine guns and stuff.
Yeah, it's an MP5, I think. But yeah, it's I don't know. The graphics look reasonable, but I don't know, man. There was a game that came out several years ago. It's a Civil War game. And I was like, you know, it's great, a Civil War game. You can, you know, imagine you're out there in a first-person shooter style, and you're fighting in your line of battle, and you're facing off. You're in the Battle of Gettysburg, and you've got a regiment coming at you, 1,000 guys. But really, it's impossible to render that kind of battle in reality. Like, if you look at the screenshot of the Civil War battle, how many people do you see there? 12 at most? You know, you're not going to see, like, 50,000 men marching towards you in formation. It's going to be, you know, 12 people, and you're going to be firing your...
But you do have an arsenal of some traditional weapons, though.
Yeah, but I don't...
Well, the game could end up being totally crap anyway. It's coming out soon. Oh man, though, check out the screenshots for Dead Rising 2. That looks fantastic.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, I think the only way they can do it is if there's, like, heavy fog or... All right, let me look. Yeah, okay. But notice the detail. Like is you're seeing them from a top-down perspective, a bit like the Total War games. And even there, you got, like, thousands of people on. But...
No, it says the engine can render, like, several thousand people at once on the one screen.
And for the people listening, it's like a guy on a tank, and you're up in the... It's a top-down view, and it's a big crowd milling around them. Yeah, there are a lot of people, but I'll believe it when I see it, when everybody moving around, and... I mean, my dream game is, like, I would love to see a game like Fields of Glory, or I guess maybe that's like a 12-year-old reference, but like a Total War type game, but from a first person, like, perspective. Like, you are the general sitting on the horse, and you do everything from that perspective. I mean, so your soldiers are all arrayed in front of you, and you have to ride around, or you're a soldier yourself, and you're in the line of battle with your, if a Civil War game, you're in the line of battle with your musket, and you gotta, you know, march in formation with everybody else, or you could be a lieutenant or a colonel or something, but you're in the front lines, and you got the epic field in front of you, and all the soldiers. Like, that would be my kind of dream game, but I don't think it's possible with today's hardware. Like, this is a good screenshot. They're rendering a lot of people, but they're all mindless zombies, so maybe they can kind of render that many people. They don't have to worry about AI behavior that much. Well, I think it's going to be being able to get... They've got it down so that you can render, like, very... almost like photorealistic. Like, I just played Far Cry. No, sorry, not Far Cry. Crysis. I played Crysis, and I'm playing Crysis Warhead. And, like, these graphics, like I got them set to, like, the highest settings. And it really is. It's like, photorealistic. And it's like you're walking around in a tropical jungle and a tropical beach, and it's amazing graphics. But you notice that in order to get the frame rate down, there's always, like, a mountain kind of, like, blocking part of the path. Or there's always something, like, that's maybe... interrupting your horizon, how much you can actually see. So I think that's what they're going to have to try to fix, like that you can see further. Like a game like, what was that? Set in the Cold War on an island, and it was like a realistic shooter.
You're thinking of Operation Flashpoint.
Operation Flashpoint is the name of it. So Operation Flashpoint, you had this whole island to run around on, and you could the graphics were not like phenomenal, but you could see forever. And I think that's what it's got to happen. You can see forever, and the graphics are like photorealistic. But right now, they can't do it.
But the game itself was super realistic. You know, it was like one-shot kill.
Oh yeah, it was realistic. That was great. Can I digress for a moment and talk about the awesomeness that is Crysis? Have you played that yet?
No.
You might be able to run it with your computer. I mean, your graphics card is like should be able to handle at least partially. I mean, I was running with full graphics. It was gorgeous and it was a load of fun. I at the time, I seem to remember call reviews being sort of generally positive, but there was always a but. But I think that was like in Crysis, you start off in this tropical island, and if you remember, I think the original Far Cry, I think you had more sort of freedom of movement. You can run around the whole island, but in this, you're sort of constrained to levels, although it doesn't quite feel like they do a very good job of giving the illusion that you're sort of free to roam everywhere, but the level is designed in such a way that it's almost like you end up going sort of naturally going in the way the designers want you to go. Like you sort of got this gentle sort of, like there's always like sort of maybe a path that leads up a side of a cliff, or there's a clearing in the forest that you'd naturally want to go through, or there's a river that you want to follow, and there's like a beautiful, well, I'll give you an example. There's one level where there's like a river, then you're sort of following this river along, and your destination, it's in the distance, and you're like, okay, how do I get there? And you in the distance you see, oh, what a beautiful waterfall. Boy, it looks great. I think I'll just walk over there because it looks so good. You want to get a closer look. So you naturally walk in that direction toward the beautiful waterfall, not off to the right where there's jungle, up a cliff, and then eventually you sort of get to the edge of the map, which kind of breaks your illusion. You sort of naturally head toward this gorgeous waterfall. So the level design's really good. So it gives you the illusion that you're sort of walking around this island completely free, but in reality, you're sort of on these sort of constrained levels. As a between levels, they skip like one mode, one level you'll be in a typical sort of first person shooter, crawling around, trying to stay silent, sneaking, but they break it up with sort of fun levels where you're in a tank and you're driving the tank around and shooting shit. It's I really liked it. Great fun, great story, kept me, it was like a movie. I was the star of the movie, and that's what I want in a game. I think in theory, I like games like, I want to like games, maybe I should say, like GTA, Grand Theft Auto, where, yeah, see, that's you like the total freedom games, where you, I think, or The Guild or something, you know, where you've got total freedom, and I like that. I would like to think I like that, you know, in theory. Oh, total freedom. Yes, I can do it. I can live my second life or whatever. But I think in reality, in order for me to actually get anywhere, I need to have somebody sort of herding me along, you know, with light at the end of the tunnel. And if I don't...
Oh, that's the funnest part of the game. I love all that meta stuff.
But it's not. Like, you gotta... I sort of bailed on playing that because I got bogged down with all, like, living of my life. I gotta go eat. I gotta go to the stupid internet. But see, that's just it. Like I don't. I mean, in theory, I would like to say, oh, yeah, I love living this second life where I gotta go eat and then go to the internet cafe to talk to these stupid girlfriends that I got, you know, I gotta date these girls and I gotta keep them all happy. Now I got like four different girls in the line. They're all calling me for dates. And, you know, I got so sidetracked with all this stuff that I sort of lost the story, you know? And so like in theory, I like all this. And I got all these houses and I gotta drive from place to place. And I get these cars and, oh, this is a great car. I want to keep this car. So I got to find a parking space in order to keep that car pristine. You know, it's in theory, oh, I like this stuff. But in reality, no, I don't like it. It's too much trouble. I want to be pushed along, herded. But see, that's just it. I want to be like you and say, oh, I want to draw this experience out. I want to live the second life. But the reality is, it just sort of peters out and I give up. It becomes too much like real life. Like, I have a life. I gotta go to the stupid store, buy milk. I gotta go to work. You know, the reality, it's too much like my real life. You know, I wanna be.
Yeah, it's like Connie playing The Sims 2. You know, she's cleaning the toilet in the game. But then you're like, can you just help me clean this up? And she's like, hey, I'm so tired. Hey, I hate doing this work.
That's right, you know. So I think, in a way, Crysis is a bit like the old Doom 3, the old Doom games, like Doom 1, Doom 2, Doom 3. It's in that tradition. And all those games I completed, by the way, the more open-ended ones, I never seem to be able to complete. Because, again, I get distracted and bogged down. So, Crysis, highly recommend it. And I'm playing Crysis Warhead, which is like a parallel story. It takes place in the same during the same events as the first game. Highly recommend. Also, Crysis 2, they've announced. And you're going to like this. Now, if you recall, the makers of Crysis were blaming piracy for their failure. And they went off and said, oh, we're going to make these games for PS3 and Xbox 360 because the original Crysis was PC only. Well, they are making it for PS3 and Xbox 360. But the makers emphasizing that they are not abandoning the PC version, and the PC version will not just be a port of the PS3 version. It's going to be its own version for the PC, and it's going to be better. This guy actually said here, Crytek boss, blah, 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 emphasized in several interviews at E3 how important the PC version would be. The PC version of Crysis 2 would be superior to the console versions for the PS3 and Xbox 360. It is not the goal that Crysis 2 looks the same on the PC and the consoles. The Crysis 2 team has a target to create the most innovative and best-looking shooter for the PC. So it's going to be pushing the PC hardware, just like a PC that this just like the PC game should, like Doom 2. All right, I'm sure everyone's very excited. Speaking of exciting, did you see these this Gundam Wedding article? Well, apparently, for the 30th anniversary of Gundam, a couple had a wedding with a Gundam theme. So they dressed up in the Gundam regalia. The man dressed like Amuro Ray from I guess the original series. And they have a giant Gundam in the background. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it looks some of these pictures, but they got this giant Gundam in the back. I'm trying to. It's crazy. I'm trying to figure out if the woman dressed like a Gundam character or not. It just looks like a normal wedding dress, but maybe it's from the show. That like a thing I don't recognize. I got the feeling that the husband must have. I can't imagine a woman volunteering for something like this.
Well, Gundam is about as male-oriented as you can get. I still recall something like Answer Man or something, and they were saying some guy was asking, "Dear Answer Man, how can I get my girlfriend interested in Gundam and stuff like that? It's really hurting our relationship." And the basic answer was, "Don't. You just don't. Macross, certainly, girls can get into that, but Gundam, no. Unless you're K.D. Lang."
Yeah, no kidding. But somehow they've named this couple has named their 6-month-old second daughter Sierra, who has been named after the female character Salem, Mass. Whatever. Anyway, so I just thought that was interesting. Some goofy photos. It's more of a visual thing, so...
Well, they've already got kids out of wedlock. That's rather scandalous for relatively conservative Japan.
Well, I suspect that they got, like, married, but, like, at the city hall, and this is, like, the...
ceremony.
Yeah. In keeping with the whole Japan theme, I mentioned this on the blog, which we are updating more frequently now. If you go to
www.anipak.blogsum.com, we're still updating it, and you'll see that the last post by Alex contains something that is really, really interesting and awesome, and I really recommend everyone go and check it out.
Yeah, it's a whole series of articles at Time Magazine about the election and about the economy, and again this pre-bubble, post-bubble. So it's the story of this. The most interesting article was this Japan after the bubble, which is about this fellow Jin Matsushita, who was like a bigwig stock trader at a company, a nationwide stockbroker in Japan. And I guess at the height of the bubble, he was making $150,000 plus a big bonus. But now he works at a convenience store, which is, he's 73 and working at a night shift at a convenience store. And it's a...
fascinating, especially the thing about the old guy.
Well, yeah, this fellow, if you read the article, the company, the securities company he worked for, went belly up, Lehman Brothers style, or Lehman Brothers style. So, and he had 90% of his savings was in company stock. So his life savings got wiped out, and he bought a house, apparently, a new house at the, like, in 1996, and the value of the house evaporated. And unlike in America, where you can declare bankruptcy and hand the keys of your house to the bank, which is, and basically it's a big problem in the States now, the banks own a lot of property, but at least it wipes the average person of the debt. They can't do that in Japan. They're personally responsible for that debt forever. They can't just hand the keys over to the bank. So this fellow still has to make payments on his house. And yeah, so he's kind of screwed. And he's working at a, he's got his pension, but he has to work at the convenience store to make ends meet. It's quite a sad story. But yeah, they got a whole pile of interesting articles here. There's another one about the sort of young people getting involved in politics, and yeah, it's good. So check that out. You can see that at the blog, Anipak, what is it? Anipak.blogsome.com.
Okay, now moving on to something which we talked about a long time ago, like Chisneyland. I can't remember which Anime Pacific episode it was, but basically in China there was this place that was had a lot of characters very similar to Disney characters, which we affectionately called Chisneyland. And Alex's wife, Kaori, was like, "Oh, this is disgraceful, this!" And she was very offended over the whole thing, and my argument was that this sort of thing will happen anywhere where people can get away from with it. Historically, the governments of China and, let's say, Turkey haven't really cared too much about that sort of thing in the past, although that's certainly changing in China. But now we can see this also happens in the good old USA, eh? There is a parade of Chisneyland proportions going on somewhere. Oregon, is it?
Well, okay, I want to say, though, that I don't think it's necessary. It's one thing to be, like, have an amusement park and charge people admission, but this is just a local parade down the street of a small town, and they've got Winnie the Pooh, and they've got Smurf, which is, like, this costume.
I can see a Papa Smurf here.
But do the young people even know who Papa Smurf is? I think that's something from my childhood. Look at the guys wearing sneakers. Like, huh? Woody Woodpecker. I mean, these costumes must have been, like, in the town closet since, like, the bloody 70s and 80s. The newest one they got is Buzz Lightyear. Everybody else is completely unrecognizable. But, yeah. But before we move on, I want to mention, I can't remember if I mentioned this last week, but if you're outside of Japan and want to watch what is basically NHK. It hasn't been possible until now. The Japanese government has launched JIB TV, J-I-B TV, which is, I don't know what that stands for, but it's basically, it's NHK World is what it is. And they broadcast the NHK programs in English on the web.
NHK reporting on the important things like preteen girls in their underwear.
Well, it's not that NHK. It's the more mundane, boring NHK that you would find in Japan. But with English dubbed. So they've got Japanese news, which is great to see. It's on every hour. It's like BBC World, but the Japanese version. It's NHK World is what it is. So you got, well, I wasn't able to see it before, but now if you go to jibtv.com, jibtv.com, you can watch what is basically NHK World, and they've got a wide variety of shows there. A lot of stuff but sort of about fashion and Japanese culture. You're not going to find any anime here. You're not going to find dramas. No wacky game shows, no dramas. It's NHK, so it's like it's documentaries about Japanese culture and about World Heritage Sites. Japanese love World Heritage Sites for some reason. So you find documentaries about World Heritage Sites and news. But it's good. Like, I was watching this the other week and last week, and it was, you know, I watched the news, and then they go to a interesting show about, you know, Japanese culture, and I was watching it. They had a good cooking show, so check it out. My Private Tokyo is pretty good. I remember, yeah, there's some good shows on here. So if you want to pretend you're in Japan watching NHK World, check out JIB TV.
Cool, I might app put this on my HDTV.
Unfortunately, you can't blow it up to full screen size, which just sucks. I got TV out, and I would like to be able to like blow it up to full screen and just watch it like on my television. But you can't blow it up. It only gets to, well, it's not full screen anyway. You know, it's like quarter screen or something. But it's also, this website also has a great, it's got a good blog, actually, with I guess about a half dozen foreigners in Japan who make sort of interesting commentary daily about what's going on in Japan and sort of daily life. And if you're curious, I highly recommend it. There's some good posts here. The newest one, yeah, so check that out.
This reminds me of when a childhood friend of mine stayed with me, and this girl's an avid soccer fan. She desperately wanted to see some pivotal game that was going on, so I was searching through all the P2P TV, and finally I found one, which was in English, from Nigeria, of all places. It was really cool, because, you know, you saw all the Nigerian ads, and I don't know, it was just totally different.
Wait a minute. Nigerian television? So is it like on how to scam, how to do like an email scam or something?
Yes, better deposed generals in garden.
That's right. Oh, yeah, that reminds me. Go to iTunes, click through on our website, and review. I forgot to say this last week, and the week before, actually. Click through our website and review the show on iTunes. There's a link there that'll bring you to the iTunes webpage. And to the review section of that page, where you can review our show. And hopefully, if enough people will give us positive reviews, maybe we'll go higher in the iTunes search rankings. So, yeah. And link to us, too. And if you've got your own... By now, I think everybody listens to the show also has their own podcast. So, please... Yeah, we got to get a promo out there. Okay, anyways, before I forget, I just remembered something that I saw on that JIB TV. It was like a local, not really a travel show. It was in Tokyo, sort of like a neighborhood of Tokyo kind of show. The hidden gems of Tokyo, basically. And they went to sort of various local amusement parks in Tokyo, and they went to like sort of a petting zoo. But the most interesting thing I saw that they showed us in this Jib TV show was Namco, which is a video game company. Like they make arcade games.
Didn't they merge with Bandai?
I don't know, but they had this whole video. It's like an amusement park, but it's more like a, probably best described as more like a giant arcade on a big scale. But it's like an amusement park inside like a mall, basically. And they've got they got rides, but it's all themed around their video games. So the host went on this sort of mini kind of roller coaster almost. But I guess it's themed around, I don't know, one of the Namco video games. I guess another one of their video games is like a ghost hunting one. So they've got around the amusement park, they've got hidden ghosts, and they give you these detectors. You walk around the amusement park with these detectors, and you can see the ghosts. These sort of detectors, which is almost like a mirror type device where you can see through, and it's got this sort of pistol, and you're supposed to, I guess, shoot them as you see them or something. It was vaguely, I don't know if it would hold my attention, but if you've got younger kids, I'm sure they'd be amused by it. They've got a website. You can probably link to it. But I really, well, what they got there, at least what I saw was most interesting on the show they showed, was they've got this really, I guess, a wide variety of foods. Like they got like a, well, it's like a food court, but it's done with themes. Like, in Japan, regional foods are very big, where you go to one like this. Oh, this region is famous for something, but and you cannot get it outside of that region. But this quasi food court is ha brings these foods to you all in one location. So you can walk from sort of shop to shop with all those different sort of regional foods. And you can take it out, and they had this they have a section where you can they have different living rooms set up to different periods. So they had like a 1950s style Japanese living room, which it has tatami mats on the floor. It's like a six mat room. They've got the black and white television in the corner showing authentic 1950s TV shows. So you can imagine that you're in a 1950s living room and you're eating your food that's taken out from the food court. You're sitting on the tatami mats. It's very clever now. I was very impressed. Makes me sad that I'm not in Japan right now to check it out.
I was thinking next time you go on a holiday to Japan, hopefully if I get this better job next year, we can have some sort of meetup.
Meets in Japan, and that's a good idea. Right, the first email we have is from a Tommy D, and I have to thank him for a rather entertaining email. Let me just read it out to you here. So I typed this up last week and did not send it since it was just for Venton. However, based on the continuance of certain people's proclivities toward being a douchebag, I'll send it anyway. I think judging from the rest of this email, he's probably talking about me here. So, do you realize how dumb and blind it is to say that it's okay for a government to do whatever it wants if they deem it to be for the greater good? So, if the Canadian government came to you on your property that has been in your family for generations and said, "Get out, we want your land for a substation," you'd be okay with that? China, maybe, doing a good. China is. By the way, I'm cleaning this up the grammar here as we go along. As he said, it was for venting, so he probably typed it out in a hurry. So excuse my stumbling here. China is maybe doing a good job now, but their government is more corrupt than you want to talk about.
Yeah, I'll get to that one in a minute.
I'm not saying that the USA isn't at all, but Are you really going to sit back and say the U.S. is worse than China? Also, not all Christians are crazy saying fossils are planted and the dinosaurs were not real. You're just as bad as the media that you criticize, only spewing whatever garbage brings positive light to your view and ignoring the majority that is socially and morally upright. And yes, a lot of Americans are undereducated and fat, but that doesn't seem to have stopped you from enjoying our movies, music, and other exports. The last good thing to come from Canada was Russell Peters. Well, that I disagree with. Russell Peters blows. Okay. I will listen to your podcast because you do give an interesting perspective on a different culture, but can't count the times I get pissed off while listening, mostly at Alex. Tommy D. from Colorado. P.S. One of the most athletic places in the U.S. All right. Boy, where to begin?
Despite it being mostly addressed to you, I think I should pipe in on a few little things. Namely, the little thing he said about China there.
So I think what spurred this email on initially was my episode 76, America as California Diatribe, that did receive a positive email, by the way. I can't remember if we brought it up last week or not. But at any rate, most of this is directed at me, except maybe the Christians thing. I think in episode 76, it was you that brought up the religious aspect to this whole thing.
Yeah, it was me that opened that can of worms.
Well, with regard to my comments, or actually our discussion last week, Dane, of China being sort of the land of opportunity and a country with bright horizons, best years of ahead of us, and, well, America, like Britain circa 1920 or the Roman Empire circa 380, I think that's self-evident. I mean, just look at the GDP numbers. If you want hard statistics, China growing 8% a year, even in the recession that we're in now. Look at all the millions of people brought out of desperate poverty over the last 10, 20 years. I remember seeing an interview with the Chinese guy saying, you know, don't you have complaints about the system, you know, yada, yada, yada. And he's like, well, 20 years ago, I would have been pulling an ox cart around. But instead, thanks to the economic growth and basically the miracle over the last 20 years, I have a job, I'm middle class, aspire to buy a car. And you got a whole country that's going from desperate poverty to essentially middle class lifestyle in a very short period of time. The energy there, the hope, the expectations, it's really heavy in the air. With you can feel it. And sure, there are still a lot, millions and millions of poor people, but they expect that things are going to get better. Now, honestly, can you say that about the middle class, or the lower class in America? Do they think that the things are going to be better 10, 20, 30 years from now? I don't know. I mean, but the American political system's inability to fix any of the major problems it has isn't helping matters, despite all the rhetoric of, oh, we're the greatest country in the world and the greatest country it'll ever be and the greatest days are ahead of us. It reminds me of a bit that Boris Johnson did about Rome. He called it the Dream of Rome, and he was talking about how in Augustus's time, the peak of Pax Romana, or at least the beginning of Pax Romana, the statues of Augustus were sort of, you know, human size, right? But then you get to the time of Constantine, where you're heading toward the, you're deep into the decline of the Roman Empire, and best days were clearly behind it. The statues of Constantine were just massive, 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 massive colossuses. So it's almost like the worse things got, the more heated the propaganda had to get to sort of balance that out. And I think, you know, the same might be true with what's going on in the States. I mean, the worse things are, the worse reality gets, the worse the future looks, the more heated the "we are the best" rhetoric, much like the Romans. So take that as you will.
You see, the thing about mainland China, and I am not directing this towards you, emailer, because I sense, you know, you were open to debate and you were being somewhat philosophical about the whole thing, but there is a certain... here's a good one. The game Battlefield Heroes, you might have heard of it. It's kind of a Team Fortress-esque game. Battlefield Heroes, for some reason, was blocked in China. Although apparently it was not blocked by China itself, it was actually blocked by EA. Normally, that doesn't affect Hong Kong at all. Hong Kong is not a part of the Great Firewall or anything like that. But EA actually blocked Hong Kong too. I think they're zoning it quite specifically. You know, they want to have one Singapore server and one Europe server. I don't know how it's going. But in the forums there, someone said, "Hey, I'm in China and I can't play this game." And someone said something along the lines of, "Well, I'm sorry, you're not in a free country like the US of A." Basically, it turned into a huge political thing, even in a situation that might not have even warranted it. But certain people you'll come across on the internet who have never left the USA or wherever they're from, or at least they've never been to China, or they just pay attention to what they see on the news. I like to call those people coddled white people. Well, more often than not white people. Coddled white people, because I think these people have no idea about the real situation in China and approach things from a very westernized point of view. There are factors in China and in, you know, a lot of non-Western places that people just can't fathom. I mean, essentially, China is kind of really an empire in a way, because it's comprised of so many different languages, ethnic groups, religions, history, geography. Just, it's very diverse. It's not all sort of Charlie Chan and stuff like that. They've got, you know, a Muslim population. They've got Tibetans. They've got Mongolians. They've got Russians and all other races that you've probably never heard of. And, you know, I will say that China is so liberalized compared to when I first went there. I'm not talking about Hong Kong here. It's a completely different kettle of fish. But it has just changed quite remarkably. But will it ever be a full democracy? Well, does it need to be? Are you thinking of things from a very Western point of view? Because Wen Jiabao, the premier of China, he said, "Well, you know, China will, to an extent, become a bit more freer." Or he didn't say that term. He said that there would be some form of democracy, but it would be democracy with Chinese traits. You see, the point is that a lot of people are asking, "Well, things are better for us now. We're relatively happy. Things are improving. So, does it really matter if I vote? Do I need to vote?" I mean, it's just a very Western concept, really. I think I heard it said best when someone said that China has waited 2,000 years for a good emperor, and now they've probably got the closest thing. And just from my point of view, I mean, I'm relatively apolitical, but in Hong Kong now, it's, I suppose you could say it's semi-democratic. I mean, Hong Kong is an autonomous region. It's actually more democratic than it was under British rule, because, you know, they had a governor. But now they have a chief executive, and they have legislators, half of which are installed by the government, and the other half are directly elected. And, you know, I really quite like it like that.
Specifically, Tommy, you mentioned corruption and how big of a problem it is, and how I guess you think it's going to sink China in the end. Well, I think if it was going to do that, it would have already happened. But don't take it from me. Like, read people like James Fallows, who writes about foreign affairs for The Atlantic, based in China. At least he was until a couple of months ago. A lot of the rhetoric on China is overblown, and that includes corruption. It's a concern, but it's not an Achilles heel. Same goes for repression. Living in China does not feel like a totalitarian state, like you got thought police watching you every minute. It doesn't feel that way. Take it from Dane. You lived in Harbin. Did you have government minders wander following you everywhere?
Yeah, when you're dealing with a country that's as big as China, which is freaking huge, corruption comes up, but it's not Mexican corruption, I suppose. I've been to Mexico and I've seen the sort of corruption there. It's not as blatant, usually, at least these days. It's not as blatant as just, bribing someone. It's more to do with, this guy being able to do this, or getting off, or getting away with doing this because his sister's husband is the chief of police in that area or something. I mean, a good example of this would be when I was working in North China, and I had a business visa as opposed to a working visa. Business visa gives you pretty much the same rights, but it's limited to 3 months at a time, whereas a working visa is 1 or 2 years or something like that. But I had one of these, and then I needed to extend it. And the boss I was working for at the time said, "Oh, gee, it's not good immigration," said, "you're going to have to leave China and apply for it from outside." So anyway, it turns out that his high school buddy that he hadn't seen in like 5 years was actually a senior police officer. And he said, "Well, look, I want to get this guy." He spun a bit of bull crap. He said, "Oh, this guy's an agricultural expert, and we could really use him. And it'd be a lot of trouble if he had to leave and then come back, and it'd cost a lot of money." So the police, the his buddy said, "Oh, okay. Well, let me look into it and see what I can do." And thanks to him, it was able to be extended. Now, technically, that is corruption, or at least not dealing with the situation in a completely unbiased manner. So, I mean, that's the sort of thing that is more prevalent. Now, that's not to say, like, anywhere there's no corruption, but the people that sort of do the bribing and stuff like that end up getting shot because, as you know, the Chinese government deals with that sort of corruption very harshly. The milk scandal being a good example, all the top people involved in that are dead. And look, quite honestly, I've lived there. There are restrictions on freedom, of course, or on freedom of expression, which sometimes I think can be a good thing, because I'm of the mind, and I don't expect everyone to agree with me, but I'm of the mind that most people are pretty stupid, and when given the freedom of speech, they end up having something extremely stupid to say. I mean, stuff that happens in not just America, but lots of places with freedom of speech. They got the Aryan Brotherhood rock concerts and KKK marches and stuff like that. Well, were I president, I probably shouldn't say this, I'd have those sort of people gassed. But I mean, anyway, at the end of the day, your average Joe in China is relatively safe and content. I mean, I can certainly say I felt safer in mainland China than most places I've been. But, I think unless you're going to run down the street screaming, "Down with the government, yay, Falun Gong," well, it's not going to have any big effect on your life.
Right. So, I mean, as long as you keep your head out of the political realm and don't make waves there, you can go about your business in basic freedom. Now, I'm not saying this is an ideal situation, but when you picture China, don't picture North Korea. That's all I'm saying. And the same thing goes with corruption. Okay, it's an issue. You got problems with copyright, you know, China pirating everything in sight. But corruption and doing business? Look, there are a lot of places you can build a factory in that area where you've got cheap labor. You got Vietnam competing heavily in that department, Cambodia, and if corruption were that much of an impediment to business, they'd go elsewhere. So, corruption, overblown. Now, secondly, infrastructure. Not necessarily related to the system of government, which Tommy's conflated here. In the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, with Robert Moses in New York, who's somewhat notorious now, but whatever, they got things done in short order. They had grand visions, carried them out. Robert Moses demolished a lot of New York in order to build bridges, freeways, tunnels. Of course, looking back now, people thinking, boy, some of those bridges and roads, that maybe they weren't necessary, and we demolished neighborhoods, and looking back now, maybe we shouldn't have built them. Well, fine. But there's a happy medium between autocratic pushing stuff through regardless of the consequences and complete paralysis in infrastructure, what the Americans have now. You've got a few dozen homeowners. I said this a couple weeks ago. You got a few dozen homeowners in bloody California who are worried about their goddamn views, not even their property. It'd be one thing if they're worried about getting expropriated, but they're worried about their stupid views and a psychological barrier in their neighborhood because, you know, right now, there is a railroad running through these towns for the Caltrain. And what the plan is to put high-speed rail on that. In order to do that, they have to upgrade the tracks and raise them in sun sections. So they'll be above ground, upsetting their views and creating a psychological barrier. It's psychological because there's a barrier there now. There's tracks running there right now. But they're going to be elevated. Therefore, and if anything, the connectivity is going to be better because they're going to make the roads underpasses. They're going to not have level crossings. So if anything, that connectivity is going to be better, but it's going to be psychological barriers. What they're worried about, you got a few dozen homeowners worried about their bloody property values holding up a $40 billion project. Now, you got that. It doesn't necessarily mean the opposite of that or get improving on that has to go automatically to China, you know, which by the way, is more responsive to public opinion than you might think. But, you know, there's a happy medium between, never mind China, let's say Robert Moses in the 1960s. There's a happy medium between complete inability to do anything infrastructure-wise, whether it be build nuclear power plants, which, you know, France, 80% of the electricity comes from nuclear power, and they don't have to worry about oil prices or fluctuations in fossil fuel prices, you know, whether it's nuclear power, the electric grid, they're trying to improve the electric grid down there. You know, the Midwest is completely disconnected from the East Coast electric grid. So if you have a surplus electricity in the Northeast and you've got a shortage in the Midwest, you can't bloody transfer it. It's completely inefficient, but they can't get that done either. An inability to do anything. It didn't used to be like that in the States in the 1930s. You know, go back to Roosevelt. You had like the Hoover Dam, the Empire State Building were designed and built and opened in a matter of years. Here it would take 20 years to do anything. Look at the replacement for the World Trade Center. You know, 8 years on, it's still a hole in the ground. You think our grandfathers would have stood for that? Hell no. So things have changed, you know, and it doesn't necessarily have to do with government. The government hasn't, you know, system of government down there hasn't changed in the last 50 years, much as it might need to. And by the way, on expropriation or what Americans call eminent domain, my grandmother's house was expropriated in Ottawa. You know, so we got personal experience with this. Of course, we weren't happy. Or my I should no, I wasn't alive at the time, but my grandmother wasn't happy. My grandfather weren't happy. You know, how I can't believe the government's taking our property to do what? To expand Ottawa University? You know, they were insulted. They wanted more money from the government. You know, they felt that what they weren't getting in compensation was fair. You know, of course they were upset. But, you know, 50 years later, you've had thousands of students go through that expanded university, incalculable benefits to society. So, you know, you can't just go by what NIMBYs were thinking. You know, I have to say, my grandparents were NIMBYs. And that they were wrong. You know, sometimes Spock from Star Trek II is right. You know, the good of a many outweigh the good of the few or the one. You know, and in the case of power plants or bullet trains or, you know, infrastructure that will benefit millions of people and just negatively affect a few dozen, I think that it should be obvious. You know, okay, let's try and recreate that spirit, that can-do gumption that we had 30, 40, 50 years ago. Let's get some a bit of that good old-fashioned gumption down. If you don't like the sound of Chinese gumption and Chinese can-do, call it a little bit of Robert Moses can-do, and a little less Jane Jacobs. And if you know who those people are, I'll give you 5 stars. Thank you. Okay, Dane, so that's my briefer rant on American politics and infrastructure. So if everybody's awake now, let's go on to the next email. Hey, what's next, Dane?
Next, Regan of Anime 82 fame shows his comedic side, and he certainly has a gift, what can I say? Incidentally, Regan, I can't find your new promo anywhere, so if you've got it, can you email it to me, please? Thank you.
Yeah, I agree, Dane. This Regan voicemail, hilarious. Play it.
Good evening, Anime Pacific listeners. I know you're all tuned in because Anime 82 has not had a new episode, so I'm sorry to put you through another episode of Anime Pacific. Now, this is a response, a voicemail, if you will. Mr. Alex had asked that I leave a voicemail because Mr. Dane, who of course is the anime part of Anime Pacific, you know, he contributed a lot to the Anime 82 show. That's www.anime82.blogspot.com. And so he said I should maybe leave a voicemail. So here, Mr. Alex, my arch nemesis, here is a voicemail for you, kind sir. First of all, I would like to welcome all the American listeners, all the disgruntled American listeners of, oh, I guess all two of you that are left on Anime Pacific. I'd like to welcome you. Come over to Anime 82. You'll be loved there. You know, it's the official podcast of Anime Love. Unlike Anime Pacific, which is the official podcast of Anime Hate. I mean, I gotta tell you guys, I'm a real big fan of Anime Pacific. I mean, it's such a cool show. I mean, it's the only anime podcast out there that's I know of that's reviewed by two socialists. Like we have Dane, who is a true blue red, you know, socialist, and then we have Alex, who's also a socialist, or should I say, national socialist? Oh. I mean, Anime Pacific's a great show. I mean, it's so unique. Like, what other anime podcast show has zero anime content? I mean, it's unreal. Like, they're avant-garde. They're newer than new. I mean, what a concept. I mean, an anime podcast with zero anime content? I mean, like, wow, that's far out. Or you have the more traditional anime podcasts like Anime World Order or, dare I say, Anime 82. Where perhaps we'll talk about classic Cell anime from the 1980s, and we may marvel at some of the masterpieces. and talk about how many frames per second per minute of classic anime, where on Anime Pacific, we have Dane talking about the number of Vietnamese ladyboy dicks he's seen on his latest adventures. So it's just a little different, you know. It's the same thing, like, you know, cells per minute, ladyboys dicks per second. You know, it's the same thing, but it's different. You know what I mean? It's like a little bit hipper. So I mean, Anime Pacific's like so cool. I mean, I'd also like to bring up, like, I know Dane and Alex. I'm sure they have two beautiful, lovely wives, and they're Asians, and that's fine. But ladies and gentlemen, you know, I'm in a band. I'm working hard. I'm like trying to get my demo out. I think we have a really good shot of making like a great demo, maybe getting a record deal. Like, it's really good stuff, and I'll let you guys know about it when it's out. But I also clean houses, which isn't very glamorous. But what some of you may not know is I did take university, imagine that, and I took religious studies. And looking at Dane and Alex's life and hearing their stories and how they went to Asia and they met two lovely ladies and, you know, they kidnapped them, I mean, married them, it reminded me of a saying that the great philosopher, the Chinese philosopher, mind you, so Dane must, his ears perked up when I said that, Confucius had a great line. It's very, very interesting, and it's full of wisdom. Let me recite it for you. Where is it in the book here? Book of Confucius. Oh, here we are. Line 82 from chapter 9. Here we go. This is quoting Confucius, so of course. It says, Confucius says, white man who goes to Asia to find a wife cannot get laid in own continent. And I just thought that was so, you know, chock full of wisdom. And I just thought I'd, you know, lay that on the listeners of Anime Pacific, because it was so cool. I gotta tell you guys, like, I used to have long hair, and you know, I'm kind of a hippie-ish kind of dude, you know what I'm saying? And often I hear the tales. Dane talks about he's a great recycler. Like, I mean, he's always getting stuff out of the dump. You know, he's pulling stuff out of the dump. I mean, he's breaking windows. He's, you know, he's stealing, I mean, refurbishing things. And, you know, that's great. That is great. I mean, I am so impressed how Dane, you know, when I was finished with his wife, he took her out of the trash. It was nothing. He just cleaned her off. I mean, she was barely used, and he dusted her off, and like he fixed her up, and you know, that's great, Dane. I mean, I gotta tell you guys, Anime Pacific is a sophisticated show. I mean, we talked to Alex, sorry. We talked to Alex, and you know, he always has very profound things to say. He's very wise. You know, he knows politics. He studies all that stuff. And, you know, I listen to him. He's very interesting. And I mean, you know, he's very sophisticated. I mean, I'm very impressed with his credentials. I mean, it takes a lot. Like, you have to be very intelligent to do Alex's job. I mean, it's tough. I mean, to say, tickets, please, leaving now, leaving now. Very exciting. I mean, Alex, it's very exciting. I mean, I'm very impressed with your career choices. I think that's awesome. I mean, I think it's so cool that Dane got a pet puppy. I mean, he's such a great guy. I mean, he's such a recyclable. I mean, I never thought about it, Dane. I mean, in the summer you have a nice, cute puppy, and then in the winter you have a nice, compact snack. I mean, it's going to be great in the winter in northern China. I mean, you think of everything, Dane. I mean, awesome. Also, I have to tell you, last week I heard Mr. Alex, he had a few not so kind words about me and my comrade Kent. And you know, both of us live in the Midwest up here in Canada, in Saskatchewan. And he said that we had raging Saskatchewan accents. I don't know what you're talking about. Take off, you hoser. He also had some negative things to say about Regina and Saskatchewan in general. He said, "Oh, it looks like a wasteland. It's so flat and boring." Now, Dane and Alex, I mean, you're married to two lovely Asians ladies, so you should be used to flat things. I mean, come on, guys. Now, ladies and gentlemen, in closing, in all seriousness, I gotta tell you guys, I love Anime Pacific. I love the website. I mean, it's a great show with a link to Anime 82. Make sure you check out the Anime Pacific podcast link to Anime 82. Thank you for listening, and truthfully, in all seriousness, guys, I think you guys are great, and I enjoy your show. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I hope I didn't hold up the show too long, but at least you had someone interesting to listen to on the Anime Pacific podcast. Back to you, Dane and Alex, and it was all in good fun.
That's all, folks.
Well, I asked for content, didn't I? And I guess he's delivered. I don't know, I might live to regret it. I don't know. Yes, thanks, Regan, I think. Well, I got a question. How did Regan know my wife's chest was Lake Saskatchewan? And how did he know about your inability to get laid in Australia?
Because if an Australian girl did lay me, then I would also be as flat as Saskatchewan.
A religious studies major ending up living in the basement of his mother's house, cleaning houses. Who would have connected those dots? Do you any know any Latin majors or philosophy majors who have actually gotten jobs? No, but no, just joking, just joking. Delete that, delete that. But seriously, as you pointed out, I am a conductor, but I'm not that kind of conductor. I don't take tickets. I don't work for a passenger. I don't work for VIA, which is the Canadian Amtrak. I don't work for VIA. I work for Freight Railway. So I'm not that kind of conductor. I'm on those 10,000 foot intermodal trains you see blocking intersections. Yeah, that's me on the head end there. More blue collar than you might imagine. So don't impugn my blue collar creds. Dane, play some Baba O'Reilly by the Who there. You know, out here in the fields, I work for my meals. However that goes. Yeah, a point taken on the anime front. We have noticed that we tend to let the anime slide in some episodes.
Rest assured, dear Regan, that shall change in the future because I've finally started to watch a lot of the stuff that I said I'd watch, and I've completed a few things, so there'll be a whole load of interviews on the way, especially when I start to feel better. I'm actually a little bit sick today, thus my relative silence.
Yes, so look for that anime segment in future episodes, and we're gonna make sure to do it on a week-to-week basis. Oh, and by the way, I'm not a socialist, and Dane's not a socialist either. He's a communist, if anything.
No, I'm not. I suppose I'm a Marxist, if anything.
I probably a little bit right of center. If anything, by Canadian standards. I actually, but 10 years ago, I was a member of the PC, Progressive Conservative Party in Canada here. But I suppose by American standards, it still makes me probably marginally left of center. But by Canadian standards, oh, a little bit right of center. Not a socialist.
Saying that like it's a bad word, Alex.
Okay, wow, that whole thing took way too long, Dane. I'm sorry. I've monopolized this whole show. I'll let you handle the next
The wrap up? Okay, so folks, that was another stellar episode of Anime Pacific. And just like Regan said, we've got to do more anime stuff. I've been really a bit crook lately, as they say. But next week, I shall be reviewing the Druaga series, both the Aegis of Uruk and the Sword of Uruk of the Tower of Druaga anime series. I've watched the whole thing, and I am going to be reviewing that. Very exciting. I apologize that this episode took so long to release. There were lots of technical problems. And then finally, when we also did this additional mail segment, I was not feeling too well. I'm actually homesick at the moment, but I'll be uploading this episode today, being the 6th of October.
happy ones are here. Let's get together.